It's time for a different take. This is Hometown Take with Dylan Matthews. Every morning starting at 5, we give you the latest local Atlanta news. Sports news doesn't stop, and we're here to get you caught up on the latest Atlanta sports news and more.
The Hometown Take is on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Now, here's Dylan.
What's going on, everybody? It is your boy Dylan Matthews live in the Kia Studios here on a Sunday morning. Good morning to you. Hope you all are doing well. Appreciate you all tuning in. Make sure you follow the radio station at 929 The Game on all social media platforms. Follow myself at underscore Dylan Matthews on all social media platforms as well. And make sure you download that free Odyssey app so you can listen to the radio station wherever you are and whenever you want to. I'll chat it up with Greg. That's why the intro played a little bit longer. And it took me a little bit longer to jump in than it usually does. I was chopping it up with my man Greg Clarkson, obviously Sam and Greg. Just getting out of here, chopping it up with them last segment. Always fun to catch up with the fellas. And we are ready to have us a fun 3 hours here, taking you up until 1 o'clock. And then my main man, John Fricky, coming up at 1 o'clock. Appreciate John Fricky, first and foremost, swapping around me. Because I was originally supposed to be on from 2 to 5 today. But not going to lie, I was doing my best to try and figure out a way to where I could go to the Atlanta Dream game. We got the Dream taking on the Aces in State Farm Arena. And I had to go support my Dream. Had to go support the ladies. And so I'll be able to do that. Shout out to John Friggies for moving some things around and allowing me to do that. We got my girl Noelle White holding it down behind the glass, doing a great job. We're going to talk some Atlanta Dream. We'll talk about that game between the Aces later on this show. Probably once we get into the afternoon stage of the show, we'll get into it a little bit, but we got plenty to get into this morning / into the afternoon as I'm taking you up until 1 o'clock. I do want to start with the Atlanta Braves because unfortunately lose last night, a very, very tough loss last night. Just the way it ended, obviously, with Ha-Seong Kim just shooting an absolute rocket, I think 104 miles off the bat, right onto the foot of Aroldis Chapman. And it ricochets off of Aroldis Chapman, but not too far away. And Aroldis Chapman gets right back up, literally bounces right back up, and is able to get Ha-Seong Kim, who did all he could, man. I mean, he busted it down the line. And, again, not the fastest guy in the world, but was busting it down the line, hustling as much as he can, and slides headfirst into first base, trying to beat out the throw. Because there were two outs, and the bases were loaded. And so if he would have found a way to be safe, Braves could have tied it up, and who knows what happens. But Aroldis Chapman, again, makes a good play. Got to tip your hat to him on that kind of play. He's able to, after getting hit in the foot and falling to the ground, get up in time and throw it over the first, get the out, final out of the game, and Braves lose it 3-2. And I want to go back, actually, because I think what probably the biggest talking point about last night is going to be is Bryce Elder giving up the go-ahead two-run home run with two outs in the eighth. And there might have been a lot of commentary about, oh, Walt Weiss left him in too long. Why did Walt leave him in? Look, first and foremost, we have absolutely nothing to complain about here in Atlanta right now when it comes to the Braves. We have no room to complain about anything the way the Braves have been playing. And we have no room to complain about Bryce Elder. He has been so good this year. Came into the game with a 1.88 ERA, and he has just been rock solid, giving you quality start after quality start after quality start after quality start. And so I hope, and I haven't seen too much of this commentary, even if I had seen some commentary on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it, I don't buy too much into it because, you know, Twitter is one of those places where it can get real nasty. You know what I'm saying? So it can be a cesspool at times. But I just hope Braves fans out there are not trying to bury Bryce Elder and hit him with the, you see? Bryce. He's gonna be Bryce. Well, let's not do that to Bryce Elder this morning. Let's not do that to Bryce Elder today. Because at the end of the day, he still only gave up 3 runs and went 7 2/3 innings. And last time I checked, that is still very much a quality start. That's better than a quality start. He gave you darn near 8 innings. Right at 3 runs, Braves offense just need to score more. And it has to be more than Drake consistently for this offense. And look, I know this offense has been scoring too, and their run differential is amazing and all those things as well. So again, I ain't complaining because you still got a chance to win the series. You won game one. You still got to go. Still got a chance to go win the series later on today. So I just hope people aren't being hard on Bryce Elder for Wilson Contreras. By the way, going down and getting the pitch. It's not like Bryce Elder hung that pitch. Wilson Contreras went down and got that bad boy too. That was just a nice piece of hitting from a professional hitter in Wilson Contreras. Well, let's not forget, he's a pretty darn good hitter in his own respect. So I just hope that people aren't being too hard on Bryce Elder this morning after what went down last night. Braves, Red Sox will play the rubber match and play their series finale later on this afternoon. 1:35 p.m. is when first pitch is set for. Going to be Grant Holmes going up against Brian Bello. Holmes, he's had his ups and downs so far this season. 2-1 on the year, 4.35 ERA, 1.31 whip, and 41 and a third innings pitched. Bello, 2-4 on the year, 6.46 ERA, 1.74 whip, and 39 innings pitched. He's given up 8 home runs on the year. Grant Holmes has given up 7, so could maybe see some long balls today. Hopefully more for the Braves than for the Red Sox, but should be an interesting matchup, an interesting rubber match, and hopefully the Braves can get it done and win yet another series this season and get to 32-15 on the year. But again, going back to last night, I don't want to hear anybody really complaining about Grant Holmes, because stuff like that is going to happen, and it's just going to, unfortunately, there are going to be games like that where sometimes you pull a guy out at the right time, and sometimes you don't. And for Bryce, it was just you left him in for maybe one too many hitters. And again, he got the first 2 outs very quickly. And then obviously, the guy gets on and Contreras, again, hits a nice pitch. It's not like that was just a terrible pitch from Bryce Elder. It was a good pitch. It was a solid pitch. Just Wilson Contreras went down and got it. And then you just had a bad break there in the ninth. Again, bases loaded, 2 outs, and you had Ha-Seong Kim hit it off of Rhodes Chapman's foot, and it just stayed close enough to Chapman to where he got time to get up and get the out at first. So just tough loss, but Braves have been good about bouncing back this year after losses, and I expect them to do the same. I mean, they've only lost 2 games in a row once this year, literally once. They've only lost back-to-back games 1 time this year. And so we talk about how good the Braves have been when it comes to winning series, handling business, going on, win streaks here and there. They've also been very good about when they do lose here and there, not letting those losses pile up. So that's another part of this, too, that you have to give Braves a lot of credit for. But, again, when you talk about the offense last night, besides Drake Baldwin and Jose Azokar, nobody else got hit. Literally, those are the only 2 guys that got hit last night. Drake Baldwin was 2-for-3 with a run scored, 2 RBIs. He had the solo homer, had a walk, and Jose Azokar was 2-for-3 with 2 doubles and scored a run. Drake Baldwin hit a solo home run, and then Jose Azokar hit a double, and Drake Baldwin hit a single to bring him in. Those are the 2 runs. That's how the 2 runs scored for the Braves. So your offense was Drake Baldwin and Jose Azokar, your leadoff guy and your number 9 guy. So it was just unfortunately one of those nights for the Braves offense. Ozzie goes 0-for-4. Matt Olson 0-for-4. Austin Riley 0-for-4. Mauricio Dubon over 3, Michael Harris over 3, Ha-Seong Kim over 4, Sandy Leon over 3. That dog ain't gonna hunt. You were 1-for-4 runners in scoring position. That one hit, again, was the RBI single that Drake Baldwin had to give the Braves their second run. Other than that, Matt Olson goes 0-for-1, Ozzy Albies goes 0-for-1, Ha-Seong Kim goes 0-for-1. And I actually lied. Bryce Elder did give you a full 8 innings after that, because I forgot he did get the final out. Then Martin Perez did a good job in the 9th holding the Red Sox where they were at. So pitcher wasn't the problem last night. It was the offense. And it's just because the offense was just Drake Baldwin and Jose Azokar. So if we're going to complain about anything that transpired last night, let's complain about 2-8 not giving you anything. Not giving you jack diddly squat on the offensive end. We're going to complain about anything. Let's complain about that, not complain about Bryce Elder. So that's how I feel about last night. So, again, still feeling good about where the Braves are at. How can you not? They're 31-15. They're in first place in the National League East by a mile and a half right now. They are still, even after last night's loss, 8 games ahead of the Phillies, 8 games ahead of the Nationals, 10 ahead of the Marlins, 11 and a half in front of the Mets. So how can you still not feel good about what the Braves got going on here? So let's just, if you're feeling a certain way, waking up this morning, feeling a certain way about Bryce Elder, just put everything in perspective. Think about where we were at last year compared to where we're at this year. It's all about perspective. Bryce has had a great year thus far, and he made really one mistake. He made one mistake last night, and it was unfortunate where that mistake happened, but he made one mistake. And let's not just, because of, you know, Bryce Elder's struggles in the past, let's remember what he's been doing this year, how good he's been doing this year, and let's not try to pile jump on him just for one mistake that he made. So, again, feeling good about the Bravos, and hopefully they can bounce right back and get a win against the Red Sox and get that series win before they head into a couple of back-to-back NLE series. After they finish this one with the Red Sox today, then Monday, they'll start a 4-game series against the Miami Marlins, and then they'll have a 3-game series against the Washington Nationals, and then they'll be in Boston to take on the Red Sox for 3. And they'll close out the month of May taking on the Cincinnati Reds in Cincinnati. So we'll see how it all plays out, and we will finish. Hopefully the Braves can finish the month of May strong and have a good month of June. But when we come back here on the Hometown Take, we are going to look at the Falcons schedule. We're not going to break down, oh, they're going to win this game, they're going to lose this game, they're going to win this game, they're going to lose this game. We're not going to do that. I'm just going to go over what I think are the tough stretches, what I like about the schedule, what I don't like about the schedule. We'll get into all that coming up here in about 5-6 minutes from now. It is a Sunday edition of the Hometown Take, an extended Sunday edition of the Hometown Take. And we'll be back here to talk some Falcons right after this on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
This is the Hometown Take.
A look at all the top local sports stories
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is the Hometown Take, live in the Kia Studios with your boy Dylan Matthews here on a Sunday morning. Good morning to you. I appreciate you tuning in. Make sure you follow the radio station at 92.9 The Game on all social media platforms. Follow myself at _DylanMatthews on all social media platforms as well. And make sure you download that free Odyssey app so you can listen to the radio station wherever you are and whenever you want to. Once you got that free Odyssey app downloaded on your smartphone and all your smart devices, you want to make sure you search for the radio station, 92.9 The Game. Once you find the radio station, follow and subscribe to the station and follow and subscribe to all the great shows on the station as well. My show, obviously, The Hometown Take, which is on regularly Monday through Friday, 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. We'll tell you more about that here in just a minute, but make sure you subscribe to The Hometown Take, The Morning Shift, The Takeouts, Midday Show with Andy and Randy, Dukes and Bell, Chris Thomas tonight, all the great shows during the weeknight as well. Got The Night Drive on Monday nights with Dom Chirosky. Got Prep Sports Nation on Wednesday nights with my guy Damian Day-Day Lewis. Got The Intersection with my girl Noelle White, who's holding it down behind the glass right now, and Jason Longshore. And then all the great shows on the weekend as well. You do get an extended version of The Hometown Take every now and then on the weekends. Also, Sam and Greg, obviously, you heard them before myself every Saturday and Sunday, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m., always holding it down. John Fricke as well from the Diamond, Grant McCauley, all the great shows here on the weekend. College football game time as well, obviously, during the college football season. Follow and subscribe to all the great shows here on the station, weekday, weeknights, weekend. Got all the great content for you. And when you follow and subscribe to all the shows here on the station, then you'll really be in the game, because then you'll get live push notifications about when shows go live, live push notifications about when shows are having guests on live. You'll get live push notifications about when new audio and articles uploaded to the website. You'll be able to go back and listen to your favorite shows in their entirety. You'll be able to go back and listen to your favorite segments and interviews from your favorite shows as well. You'll be able to do all that and more with the free Odyssey app. So download that thing on your smartphone and all your smart devices today. All right. We got to talk about the Atlanta Falcons schedule here, because talked about it on Friday on the regularly scheduled edition Hometown Take. And if you are unaware, Greg mentioned it earlier when I was spending some time with them at 9:40. But if you're just tuning in, or if you're just hearing my voice from the first time, you're like, hey, who's this guy? Well, nice to meet you. My name is Dylan Matthews, and I am on Monday through Friday, 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. I am the precursor to the morning shift, Hometown Take. Again, Monday through Friday, 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. And again, was talking about the schedule on Friday. So again, make sure if you're up there early, tune into the Hometown Take. We'll get you energized. We'll get you ready for your day, Monday through Friday, again, 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. But looking at the schedule, the Falcons 2026-2027 schedule is here. And there are some things I like, some things I don't like. Feel like the Falcons caught some breaks, and there's going to be few different tough stretches in here for sure. Overall arcing thoughts about the schedule. First and foremost, I like the fact that you, one, got an early Thursday night game. Your Thursday night game this year is going to be week three, obviously Thursday, September 24th at 8:15 against the Green Bay Packers. And the other good thing about that is that that Green Bay game is going to be in September rather than in December, when it's going to be frigid in Lambeau. So that's also good as well. Honestly, you get two games that could have been cold weather games. Week one in Pittsburgh, we know that could have been cold, but that'll be nice weather in Pittsburgh in September. And then again, just mentioned having the Green Bay game that's in Green Bay, in Lambeau, having that in September as well is going to be nice, because that, again, could have been a very much a cold weather game. That game or the Pittsburgh game could have been cold weather games, but both of them should have nice weather considering they're in September. So those are two good things, real three good things about the schedule so far. You got the two games that could have been cold weather games in Pittsburgh and in Green Bay. They're going to probably be nice now because they're in September. You got the early Thursday night game, so you're going to have a little mini bye early on in the season. You know, when you have that Thursday night game, you kind of have that mini bye week because you play so early in the week and then you don't have to play until that next Sunday. And for the Falcons even, it's for that next Monday. So you get a little extended mini bye week, because after the Thursday night game, you don't play again until that next Monday night against the New Orleans Saints, which will be in New Orleans. So that is good. You'll get a little bit of extra rest, you know, early on in the season. And you do have a late bye week as well, too. So you got a early mini bye and a late bye week in week 11. So I do like those parts of the schedule. Now, as far as what I don't like about the schedule, you have a very, very tough stretch from week, starting week 5 all the way until week 10. And depending on how good the Saints are this year, it could be a tough stretch all the way from week 3 to week 10. Because we know the Saints last year looked like they started to figure some things out with Tyler Shuck. And they added some good pieces. They had as much as I hate the Aints, I can't cap. Saints had a nice draft. They did some good things in the draft. One of those was getting a Georgia Bulldog in their own respect, and Christian Miller, the defensive tackle. So depending on what the Saints are looking like this year, we're talking about, and look, even on top of that, even if the Saints aren't all that in the bag of chips, even if they aren't having the best of years, playing the Saints is always a tough game because of the rivalry, right? So when you talk about playing the Green Bay Packers week three on a Thursday night, then playing the New Orleans Saints Monday night, then playing the Baltimore Ravens Sunday night. That's right. You got three back-to-back-to-back primetime games. Thursday night against the Packers, Monday night against the Saints, Sunday night against the Baltimore Ravens. That one, it will at least be in the ATL. But then you got, after the Sunday night Ravens game, they got the Bears, 49ers, Bucks, Bengals in Madrid, then the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, that is a gauntlet. Again, especially if the Saints are actually kind of good. Talk about the Packers, playoff team, Saints. You know, we'll see how they're looking. Ravens, I know they didn't end up making the playoffs last year, but the Ravens were still a pretty darn good team, especially when Lamar Jackson is healthy. We know what that team can be. Make no bones about that. That's still a good football team. The Bears, playoff team. 49ers, playoff team. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they were on the cusp of being a playoff team, even though we helped spoil their season last year. I know they don't have Mike Evans, but that's still a pretty darn good football team. Then the Bengals, if they're healthy, we know what they can do with Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and T. Higgins. And they have made some upgrades on defense. They have gotten better defensively between the draft and what they did in free agency. And then the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes will be back. You have to think he'll only be getting better and better as the season moves along. So by the time week 10 hits, he'll probably be feeling pretty darn good about that ACL. So, I mean, that is a gauntlet of a run. When you talk about Packers, Saints, Ravens, Bears, 49ers, Buccaneers, Bengals, and Chiefs, 7 weeks, a 7 week absolute gauntlet. Now, the good news is you do have a good number of those games that are home. Green Bay's on the road, New Orleans is on the road, but then you get the Ravens at home, Bears at home, 49ers at home. They can go back on the road to take on Tampa Bay, but then, oh, well, Cincinnati's not really. Cincinnati's technically a home game. You're the home team, but you're in Madrid, so that is what it is. And the Chiefs game is at home, so that's good, but they're still the freaking Chiefs. So, I mean, you have an absolute gauntlet of a schedule weeks. Honestly, you can call it weeks 3 through 10 at this point. And then, once you come back from the bye week, which is week 11, it's not that much easier. And it really depends on what these teams are looking like. Because if the Vikings with Kyler Murray, and I think Kyler Murray is probably going to end up winning that job, but it also could be J.J. McCarthy. But I personally think it's going to be Kyler Murray. So for the sake of conversation, you take on Kyler. Is Kyler Murray going to be more motivated this year because he did say that he felt like the Cardinals gave up on him? Is that going to motivate Kyler Murray? What version of Kyler Murray are we going to get on this Minnesota Vikings team that I do think if they get good quarterback play, they are going to be a team that is to be reckoned with? I know they're in a tough NFC North division with the Bears, with the Lions, who you also play, and you actually play that next week, and with the Packers. So you're in a tough they're in a tough NFC North division, but still that could be a good football team, depending on how Kyler Murray plays for them. But you got Minnesota in Minnesota, which those fans are crazy, and they got a very good fan base, and home games in Minnesota are definitely tough to play. That's a tough environment for a road team. You're in Minnesota, then you do come back home to take on the Detroit Lions, but the Lions are a team that I feel like will bounce back, even though they didn't have a great year last year. Definitely didn't meet their standards as far as the year they had, but that could be probably going to be a tough game for you. Then you're in Cleveland to take on the Browns. That's going to be a cold, cold game. And we'll see if it's Deshaun Watson or Shedeur Sanders at quarterback. By that time, if they're no good, maybe it could be Dylan Gabriel. So that'll be tough to see just how good or not good the Browns are. It's kind of a wait-and-see type thing, but still could end up being a tough game for the Falcons. Then you have the Commanders. If Jaden Daniels is healthy, you got to think they're going to be a pretty good team. And then you finish out the season with three division games, back to back to back. You finish out the regular season taking on your division. Bucks at home, Saints at home. Then you finish the season in Carolina taking on the Panthers. So that's tough as well, finishing the year with three straight division games, which hopefully they all mean something and you're playing for something at that point in time. But We'll have to obviously wait and see for that. So there's good, there's bad, and there's ugly when it comes to this Falcons schedule. But look, there's no easy schedule out there. And I hope anybody that thought, oh, man, the Falcons got a cupcake schedule this year. I saw on the NFL Twitter page that they got the fifth easiest schedule. Yeah, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I knew by just looking at the opponents that this schedule was going to be tough. I didn't even need to see what order they came in because it didn't matter. It absolutely did not matter. The problem with the going by opponent win percentage last year is the Lions had a down year last year. Do you really expect the Lions to have another down year this year? I don't. The Chiefs had a down year last year. Do you expect them to have back-to-back down years? I don't. The Commanders had a little bit of a down year last year because Jaden Daniels was in and out of the lineup and mostly out of the lineup. You expect them to have another down year? I don't. The Bucs will probably be improved. The Saints look like they're getting better. The Panthers look like they're getting better. So, yeah, you can't go by opponent win percentage last year when you talk about the strength of schedule because teams change so much, evolve so much from year to year. You just don't know what's going to happen. And even throughout the season, there are going to be games, just like there always are, for the Falcons that they're going to lose games that they shouldn't have lost. They're going to win games that we feel like they shouldn't have won. And hopefully it's more of the latter. And hopefully we're talking about the Falcons being able to make a playoff push this year. But for me, for the Falcons, figure out what you got in Michael Penix Jr. Figure out if he's your franchise quarterback or not. Figure out who is going to be a part of this team long term, who is and who isn't a part of the future of this franchise, and who's going to be part of the foundational building blocks along with Bijan and Drake and Jalen Walker. Figure out who else is along for the ride for the long term. And if you figure out those things and you come away with a nice foundation both on offense and on defense, and you have and you at least know what you have to do quarterback-wise, whether that's, okay, we know Michael Penix Jr. is our guy. That would be great. That would be the best-case scenario, in my opinion. Or if maybe Tua has a resurgence and you feel like Tua can be the guy. Okay, fine. Or if you figure out neither one is the guy and you need to go draft a QB, that's fine too because you got a deep quarterback class this year. Whatever the case is, figure out what you do or don't have at quarterback and figure out what you need to do at quarterback to make sure you get that franchise QB. And as long as they figure that out, as long as they figure out who is and who is not going to be a part of the long-term future for the Falcons, I think that's what's most important. And if you do that, then I can at least call the season a somewhat success. All right, when we come back here on the Hometown Take, we got a game 7 today in the NBA. Cavs, Pistons. We'll see who can punch their ticket to the Eastern Conference Finals for a date with the New York Knicks. I'll give you my thoughts on that game coming up next here on the Hometown Take, live in the Kia Studios with your boy Dylan Matthews here on a Sunday morning on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
This is the Hometown Take.
A look at all the top local sports stories
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is the Hometown Take live in the Kia Studios with your boy Dylan Matthews here on a Sunday morning. Hope you all are having a great start to your Sunday. Hopefully the day has been easy like Sunday morning. Make sure you follow the radio station at 92.9 The Game on all social media platforms. Follow myself at underscore Dylan Matthews on all social media platforms as well. And make sure you download that free Odyssey app so you can listen to the radio station wherever you are and whenever you want to. We got a game 7 today in the NBA playoffs. Cavs, Pistons, going to be battling it out tonight at 8 o'clock on Amazon Prime Video. See who can punch their ticket to the Eastern Conference Finals and set up a date with the New York Knicks for a chance to go to the NBA Finals. And I think it should be a good one between Cavs and Pistons. Pistons made a little bit of a statement and kept themselves alive after the Cavs had a chance at home to close out the series and get to the Eastern Conference Finals. But the Pistons, a huge road win, 115-94. And I'm going to let you hear from Kenny Atkinson, Donovan Mitchell, James Harden here in just a second about what went wrong for the Cavs in that game. But, man, a few things went wrong for them to me. First of all, they did not shoot fairly well. Shot 34% from three, 39% from the field. Not good enough in a playoff game, especially when the Pistons shoot 52% from the field and 44% from three. So defense wasn't quite there for the Cavs, giving up a few too many easy looks, and then you couldn't shoot well yourself. James Harden wasn't terrible, but wasn't necessarily great either. 23 points, 6 of 13 from the field, 3 of 8 from 3. Donovan Mitchell had a very inefficient 18 points. He was only 6 of 20 from the field, 2 of 6 from 3. And besides, I mean, they got enough from their starters. Evan Mobley gave him 18. Evan Mobley actually had probably the best game out of everybody, him and Jared Allen. Evan Mobley had 18. He was 6 of 14 from the field, 2 of 5 from 3. Jared Allen was 5 of 6 from the field. And Dean Wade, again, he just hasn't been giving enough offensively. Only 3 points, made a three. He was 1 of 2 from three. That's it. And you got 10 points from Sam Merrill off the bench, 6 points from Max Strus. But other than that, your bench gave you absolutely nothing. So bench scoring a problem too, especially when on the other side you have Duncan Robinson giving the Pistons 14 off the bench, hitting 4 threes. And Paul Reed, their backup big man, giving them 17 points off the bench, 7 of 9 from 7-9 from the field, excuse me, and hitting a three. Like, if the Pistons are going to get that type of effort off the bench, and they also, by the way, got 8 points from Caris LeVert, former Hawk, and Marcus Sasser gave them a solid 9 points. So when you're getting that type of production from the Pistons bench and you aren't able to reciprocate that if you're the Cavs bench, that's going to be a problem. And then if you go to what the overall team stats look like, the Cavs did not do a good job as far as the defensive rebounds go. They kind of neutralized it a little bit with some offensive rebounds. They beat them 16-13 on the offensive glass, 30-24 on the defensive glass, though. And turnover battle was pretty similar, but they got absolutely manhandled in the paint, 48-26. They absolutely got manhandled in the paint. A lot of that is from the work of Jalen Duren and Paul Reed, though. Can't forget Paul Reed, like I said, putting in nice work off the bench. So they got to toughen up in the paint. Look, they got those Twin Towers down there, but Jalen Duren and Paul Reed are some big dudes as far as muscle mass goes. Those are some big boys. So Jalen Duren and Paul Reed did a good job of moving around Jared Allen and Evan Mobley when they wanted to, because even though Mobley and Jared Allen have good length, they don't necessarily have – They're slender. They're a little bit light in the britches a little bit. So I wonder if that could possibly rear its ugly head again in Game 7. We'll see. This game in Detroit too, by the way. So Pistons fans going to be loud and proud. And I hate to say it, but the Cavs might have missed their shot on this one. I don't know. I can still see the Cavs, look, winning on the road. Obviously, they've already won on the road so far this series. So I'm not going to say the Cavs are out of it, but all the momentum on the side of the Pistons right now. But this series has been so wishy-washy, so back and forth, that I can see, honestly, it going either way. For the Cavs on their side, look, your two guys got to be guys. Donovan Mitchell and James Harden both have to show up. Both of them. Not going to be enough for just one. Both of them got to show up. Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, they don't have to have huge games to me scoring-wise down low, but they have to make a difference down low defensively. Can't let Jalen Duren and Paul Reed have the same game that they had in Game 6. Can't let them dominate down low. Can't let them – you can't get outscored. When you have Jared Allen and Evan Mobley down low, you can't get outscored 48-26 in the paint. That's just – that's not going to work. That dog will not hunt. So you have to have some toughness down low if you're Jared Allen and Evan Mobley when going up against Paul Reed and Jalen Duren. And then, obviously, for both teams, you want to limit turnovers and – limit second chance points, all the regular things that it takes to, you know, win an NBA game. But for the Pistons going to them, you need other guys besides Cade Cunningham to step up. And you got that in game six, and that's why you saw the Pistons win it. You got 14 points from Duncan Robinson off the bench. He went 4-7 from three. You got, like I said, 17 points from Paul Reed. Dennis Jenkins gave you 15. Asar Thompson gave you 10. Jalen Duren gave you 15 and 11. Now, you want to probably see more from Tobias Harris, but if you're getting that kind of production from everybody else, then you can afford a six-point game from Tobias Harris. So, for me, for the Pistons, it's just about the other guys stepping up offensively, because I think defensively, the Pistons are always going to do enough defensively to keep themselves in the game. I'm not worried about necessarily the Pistons' defense. It's their offense. Are they going to get enough contribution from everybody else not named Cade Cunningham to stay competitive in this game seven? And then for the Cavs, like I said, James Harden, got to show up. You got to finally beat the allegations of not showing up in the playoffs. Donovan Mitchell, got to be Donovan Mitchell. Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, again, you got to produce a little bit offensively, but mainly you got to be that rim-protecting defender. You got to be able to not get bullied in the paint by Jalen Duren and Paul Reed. And then Dean Wade, got to give him something from three. Max Strus, can he give them something from three off the bench? And overall off the bench, can the Cavs get more production than just 10 points from Sam Merrill and 6 points from Max Strus? Because that's really all you got. Jalen Tyson gave you 2 points, and Naquan Tomlin gave you one. Can you get more production from the bench if you are the Cavaliers? So that's going to be very interesting. The battle of the benches, going to be interesting. Paint battle, going to be interesting. So there are a few different matchups to watch here that are going to be interesting to see. Let's let you hear a little bit from both teams here. And when we talk about this Game 7 matchup, and one thing Kenny Atkinson talked about, Cavaliers head coach, he talked about handling the Pistons' big advantages. And again, to me, I think the Pistons have, as far as those advantages go, at least the way I see it, I feel like the Pistons do, when their bench is on, I feel like they do have a little bit of a better bench than the Cavaliers, because to me, it's really just Max Strus and Sam Merrill. Dennis Schroeder, he can be that guy at times, but more times than not, I feel like Dennis Schroeder is really not giving you much. But on defense, he's fine, but offensively, he's not giving you much. We talk about the Pistons, though. Their bench, again, has to be on, but when their bench is on, when Duncan Robinson is hitting shots, Paul Reed it can be a presence down low. Caris LeVert is a shot maker and create his own. So when you got guys going, Kevin Huerter has been a DNP a couple of times for the coach's decision, but we've seen Game 7 Kevin in action before. I don't know if he still got that in him, but either way, the overall point is, to me, I think the Pistons bench has more potential than the Cavs bench. So I think that's definitely an advantage. But let's hear Kenny Atkinson talk about handling the Pistons' big advantages.
They won the force battle tonight. You know, we won it last game. They won it tonight. That's how this goes. They're more forceful in their drives, rebounds. You know, they just had the advantage in being a more aggressive team. It's just very clear. But again, we just got to switch it, right? We got to turn the tables. Big key, you know, going into a game seven. We can't not be the more aggressive team, and they were tonight.
He's absolutely right about that, especially with the Cavs being on the road. Going to be in a very raucous Little Caesars arena with Pistons fans that are ready to see their team go back to the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time in, I don't even know how long, 2004? Probably. Either way, it's been a long, long time since the Pistons have had a chance to get to where they have a chance to get to with a win tonight. So, Cavs are going to have to come out with some intensity, way more intensity than they had coming out in Game 6. It felt like in Game 6 they were just kind of like, yeah, we're here. We feel like we got all the momentum. We think we're going to, you know, go ahead and get this done. Send the Pistons out of here. The Pistons probably ain't got no more life left in them. Sucked all the life out of them after getting that last win. We're good. About to just come in here coast to a win. No. Pistons came in and fought. They were scrappy. They played like their backs were against the wall, and so they got the win. And the Pistons and the Cavs could not match that intensity, and they got to match it tonight. Speaking of matching intensity, let's hear James Harden talk about how the Cavs did not come out with the right intensity in Game 6, and they paid for it.
Nope. Not at all. No, not at all.
Can you elaborate as to maybe why it wasn't there, considering this was a chance to clinch and go to the Eastern Conference Finals?
That's a great question. That's a great question. You know, I think we didn't start off the game well. Still had the lead, and then just throughout the course of the game, we never really kicked to that second level, or even second level, which is, you know, which is the level we need to get as a 3 or 4, but which never really got us to that. We had opportunities, little small spurts, but it was never like a consistent flow on both ends of the ball, which is a little frustrating. But you know, can't do nothing about it. You gotta start focusing, gearing our mind for, you know, one game on the road.
That's troubling to me to hear James Harden say, you know, it's a great question on why they didn't have the level of intensity that they should have had in a potential closeout game for them at home. That's troubling. And so now you're going to a environment where you're on the road, like I said, in front of a raucous arena. And now you have to try and find a way to get that intensity on the road where the crowd is going against you. It's going to be tough. Now, they got the veterans to do it in James Harden, Donovan Mitchell, who have been in those situations before. But still, I mean, to me, it's troubling to know you couldn't get up, get the energy, get the intensity that you needed for a closeout game at home in your crib, in your arena. How does that happen? So that's why I said at the beginning of the segment, I think the Cavs may have lost their chance, but we shall see. By the way, while we're on the topic of the NBA, SGA has won NBA MVP second consecutive year. SGA has won MVP. And look, can't be mad at it. SGA's been that dude, man. He's been that dude, and it feels like he does mean everything to that team. So congratulations to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander winning NBA MVP second year in a row. When we come back here on Hometown Take about 5-6 minutes from now, we're going to go from the hardwood to the field, talk some NFL, get into some NFL headlines, and is Deion Sanders starting to do too much when it comes to Shador? Is he starting to talk too much? I think he, unfortunately, and I hope I'm wrong, but he unfortunately might be starting to get into the category of helicopter parent. And I hope I'm wrong. But I'm going to let you hear this soundbite that makes me feel like you need to take a step back a little bit. We'll talk about it next here on Hometown Take, live in the Kia Studios with your boy Dylan Matthews here on a Sunday morning on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.